Hey there, and welcome to another episode of the Love Offering Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Adams, and today's guest is Becky Kaiser. Becky is on the show talking about how to stop striving and live purposefully and abundantly. If you are tired of trying to be enough, this episode is for you. The truth is, you were never meant to be enough, no matter what culture might tell you. Christian women today are bombarded with confusing messaging. They're supposed to do and be it all, but also die to themselves. They're supposed to believe that women can do anything and also surrender everything to God. Adding to that pressure, many women feel stuck in their current reality, spinning on the hamster wheel of life. They scroll past images that tell them everyone else has it together and is experiencing a purpose-filled, adventurous, fun, loving, and God-honoring life. Overwhelmed and at a loss, most women go one of two places: defeat or self-help empowerment, even Christian self-help. So Becky is talking about how God can. She helps us realize this truth. On our own, we were never meant to be enough. That is the gospel message. That is why Jesus came. But God can get you unstuck and find purpose you have never known. You will identify the lies you've internalized, replace those with new truths, and find freedom through realistic, practical, and life-changing strategies. Tune in to realize you don't have to be enough because God is more than enough. On your own, you can't, but God can.
Well, hello, Becky, and welcome to the Love Offering Podcast. I'm so happy to have you.
I'm so excited to be on here and talk with you today, Rachel.
So we are chatting about something that I struggle with personally. So I am personally interested in today's conversation, and I know and fully confident that everybody else will be as well. So we're chatting about how to stop striving and live purposefully and abundantly, which is what we all want. So as we begin, I'm interested to hear about your own story of striving.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like my story just like that goes on and on and on and on and on. Striving, it never ends. Yeah, so that's the tagline for my new book, But God Can, and it comes from a deep personal felt need in life experience of just feeling like, you know, like when the hamster on the hamster wheel just like keeps spinning and spinning and spinning, I felt like that was me in my life, that even though I loved God, even though I had good community and like a roller coaster of a life, right? But for the most part, as I was striving, as I was doing all these things, I felt like a hamster on a wheel instead of like someone who's just living this purpose-filled life. I felt stuck going and going and going, but going nowhere. And so my story of striving is, well, it's a lifetime. There's not like one particular story I could tell you that's like, and this is when I strived and this is when I was free of striving. It's a constant daily battle of just either trying to strive in the career and life that I want, trying to strive in when I was single and wanting to not be single anymore, trying to strive to have kids, even though doctors had said it wasn't likely for me, or trying to strive to have the house that I want but can't afford, or you know, like in ever, or the body I want and just can't get to. It was a constant life of feeling like, man, I'm taking two steps forward and falling five behind, or I'm taking eight steps forward and falling just seven behind. And it was exhausting. And so there has been really intentionally the past 10 years specifically of just saying, I want a better way. I want a different way. And that's not perfect, but it is more looking like two steps forward, one step back now, as opposed to this incredible roller coaster, incredibly exhausting roller coaster I had been on before, which I know is super, super vague. So we can dive in wherever you want. But that's where the felt need came from.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm on the hamster wheel, and I think there's this, just this wanting everything to be perfect and wanting it quickly and feeling like maybe everybody else is doing that. And so we're trying to keep up and we're behind. Mm-hmm. And it is, I think you're right. It's exhausting and it's unattainable and it's unrealistic, right?
Totally unrealistic. But it's what, especially with social media and TV, we feel like we should already be there, or we should already be able to do something, or it should go faster. We were having our floors redone the past couple of weeks, and the contractor that was here was laughing with me because I was like, okay, so like how long when they started one thing, because our house just, it was a mess. And so like when they were starting one thing, I was like, so how long? And he goes, I know when you watch the shows on TV that like this part of it is like 3.5 minutes, but it's going to actually take this long to do it right. And it was like such a life lesson of, Becky, you see people posting something on social media and it just seemed like it happened like that for them. But you don't know all the sacrifices it took. You don't know the unfulfillment they might still feel, but are having to portray in this certain way. And I think, like, just from what you were sharing, like, I resonate with what you said of, like, feeling like I should have it together and yet I still don't. Or that it should be easier or go faster or be quicker, and it's just not.
Yeah. Well, and so we are, so many of us, prone to strive. I think one of the reasons that I'm prone to strive is because I do feel so inadequate and insecure. So it's this idea of like trying to prove my worth and like want to be affirmed and want to be validated from people in my life. People that I don't even know, you know, like on social media, which is ridiculous. Yeah. And then even the Lord, I mean, I want, you know, one day for the Lord to say, well done, good and faithful servant. And so even still, I find myself, even though I know he loves me, regardless of what I do and what I accomplish, and I know that, but yet I'm still like, Lord, are you proud of me? Like, I read my Bible today, prayed today, you know, like just this checklist of what I'm supposed to do, like what a good Christian woman is supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And so I think, do you think the root of this is really, we need to find our security in Christ and our identity in him, and not then just constantly be trying to chase after the things the world is telling us to chase after?
100%. And let me just tell you, like, Rachel, you are a unique person, but your struggle is not unique. Like, I would say 99% of the women I talk to feel the exact same way. And that's in every context of life, that we feel not enough in whatever we're doing and really wanting to be enough, or being told we're good enough just as we are. And when you were sharing that, it just made me think about times when I've really struggled in that same way, which is, again, still a daily battle for me. And I'll tell you, like, the story I read in the Bible that gave me the most freedom in that now when those thoughts still pop up, is what I tell myself is, you know, the parable of the talents, when Jesus was sharing the parable of the talents, but this owner was going on a business trip or going out of town. And he entrusted one of his servants with one talent, one of his servants with two talents, and another servant with five talents. And at first, like, I'm a big skeptic. Like, I'm just not an easy one to trust. So even at first, I was already kind of like offended by this story. Like, why? Like, why are you giving different people different things? This doesn't seem right. And then the story just got more complicated. The one who just had one got really afraid and was like, man, if I lose this, I have nothing, and buried it. The one who had two went and invested it, did stuff with it, and he turned his two to four. And then the one that had five grew it also and went from five to 10. And I remember, like, just in reading the story, you feel like a bit of like, that's not fair, right? Or like, I'll never measure up. Like, even the one who did great still just had four and the other one already had 10. Like, will I ever catch up? And when I read the story a few years ago, I don't know if I share all this in the book or not, but when I read this story a few years ago, I, like, the Lord really corrected me and was like, Becky, number one, good job. You're not the one anymore. Like, I used to be the one. I used to be so afraid I was going to mess it all up that I would hide and bury until I just was certain God was blessing something or doing something. So he was like, well done. Like, you're not hiding anymore. But then he was like, so now you're looking at the one who had two and the one who had five. And what he showed me in that is the owner's response to both the two and the five was the exact same. To both, he said, well done, good and faithful servant. Now, the one that had five that turned into 10 got the one that had been buried. And so now he had 11. And I still would be like, again, not there. Like, I'll never catch up. And that's where the Lord really corrected me and said, I don't want you to catch up. Like, you may be the person that just has two, that grows it to four, and that's perfect. That's what I've called you to. So stop, like put the blinders on, right? And stop comparing yourself to what either your expectations are or the expectations that are put on you by other people. So that's been like one of the most practical tools for me, is just saying, okay, I'm gonna rewire my brain to establish what is enough, like what I should be, because it doesn't, I'm not needing to prove myself as a good and faithful servant. He's already said that, right? He already takes delight in you, Rachel, and exactly what you're doing. And maybe right now you're just at the, you've turned your two to three and you're like, feels not enough. And what you don't realize is four is coming tomorrow, you know? And I think we're too hard on ourselves as women.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even last week I was telling my husband I was disappointed in something because I, you know, like what I was doing is not fruitful. So then I start, you know, to, you know, go down this whole rabbit trail of, well, maybe I'm not supposed to do it anymore. Maybe this is the way Lord's telling me that I'm not supposed to do it because it's not bearing any fruit. Or maybe it's the enemy, you know, or, you know,
so hard
whatever,
to know.
You know, the kind of the thoughts that we have. And my husband's like, Rachel, you are so hard on yourself. You would never, like, if our children were going through what you're going through, you would never speak to them the way you're speaking to yourself. You would be encouraging. You would tell them to persevere. You would tell them they have what it takes in the Lord to do what God's called them to do, and you would tell them to keep going and to stay encouraged. And but yet for yourself, you're doing the exact opposite. You're just defeating yourself and just tearing yourself down. Why do you do that? But I think that that's so common for us as women. Do you?
It's so, like, we are so mean to ourselves. And I've been going to a new counselor this past year. And one of the first things she really got on to me about is a couple things. One, like I talked earlier about should, and she was like, you have really shoody thinking. I'm like, because I'm constantly like saying like, I should this, or I should that, or this should that. And she was like, we have to like stop with what you think you're supposed to be doing all the time. And then she talked to me a lot about this like whole self-love mantra of what does that look like to be kinder to ourselves? And one of the things she had taught me with that was, I mean, it was like a long process of teaching me about that. But one of the ones specific to like what you were just talking about, Rachel, of she said, if you would never say this to a trusted friend, you have to stop saying it to yourself. So then I had to for a whole week, like my homework assignment with her was if I had a thought, I had to write it out. And then I had to write out what was my first response to that thought. And then I had to write out what would a trusted friend say. So like example, I yelled at my kids before school in the morning, right? So my first thought, which happens, that's like a frequent occurrence of like, I want to be that really sweet, kind, calm mom. But when they like, when I have to ask them 1800 times to find their shoes, put their shoes on, get the water bottles filled out and get to the car when my friend's been sitting in the driveway to pick them up for already 3 minutes, I lose my cool, which is not a good thing, but this is a real thing. So in this like moment, I would be like, just get your shoes on and get out the door, but raise my voice so much that like my throat's a bit sore. So then for the rest of the day, I'm like totally shaming myself. You're the worst mom. They're never going to trust you. You, like, they're traumatized at school. They're probably going to fail a test or whatever. Like, you know, like the spiral we do as women. And what my counselor said is like, okay, so in that one example, what would you say to a trusted friend if she told you about that date, which I guarantee you she's also had, right? And she, I was like, well, if my friend told me, I'd be like, yeah, that must have been a really hard day. Like, oh, I hate mornings like that. Why don't you like pick your kid up from school, go get a Sonic drink, half off, sit in the car with him for a couple of minutes, repair whatever was said, own your stuff, but then also tell them, let's figure out a new plan for how we're going to like get shoes on in the morning. And then she would finish it by saying, oh, and why don't you have some chamomile tea? Because that really helps me when my throat's sore after yelling too. You know, like, because that's what friends say to each other is we don't let each other off the hook to be however we want, you know, but we also show grace where grace needs to be shown. And that's one of the things I'm learning and struggling to learn.
Yeah. Oh, me too. But that is just a helpful way to look at it at a new perspective and give ourselves more grace. I think, you know, we're talking about not ever feeling like we're enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is so much of that, that like our society would say, oh, you are enough. You can do this all on your own, you know? Mm-hmm. But the reality is from us who are believers, there is this reality that we actually aren't enough. Yes. And that's actually maybe a good thing. Do you have anything to say on that?
The original title I wanted for this book when I was first starting to work on it was, it was called Not Enough. And it evolved to this because the focus really needs to be less on what we wrongly believe about ourselves and more on who God actually is. But this not enough idea is, it's just a fault. It's a lie that we believe, but we feel stuck in, right? That we aren't enough, that we don't belong, that we don't fit in. And you're right. The gospel message is actually like where culture is telling us all the time, like, you got this, girl, you can do anything. And even like Christian culture is really buying into that now too, right? Of like, it's all about empowerment and freedom and all this. And those are very good things. The life coach in me loves seeing this positivity come into the Christian world. However, when we just say you are enough, that's not true, because on our own, we're not enough. Like on our own, we can't, but God can. And so the gospel message is that we weren't enough on our own. That's why we needed and still need Jesus to save us. And the more we try to like put on these mantras of feeling enough, it reminds me of the, I don't know if you saw this, like way back in the day, SNL, Saturday Night Live skit where the guy would like talk to himself in the mirror of like, I'm strong, or whatever it was, I'm brave, and gosh darn it, people like me. Do you know the skit I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I think of when I hear these mantras coming around the Christian circle now of, we're trying to like pump ourselves up, and that feels so great, right? Like for a moment, you're like, yeah, I am enough. But the moment you yell at your kids, or you face a diagnosis, or your husband cheats on you, or you can't pay a bill, or whatever it may be, you get stuck in a gossip storm with friends, or a friend betrays you. When those things happen, those mantras fall flat. And so that's what was really important to me, is that we could provide a message for women that it would hold up even in the hardest spaces, even in the most challenging spaces, that they could acknowledge, okay, I can't do this. Like, I can't heal myself of cancer. I can't change my husband's heart. I can't make my teenager less hormonal. Like, I can't do these things, but God can. And so when we embrace our not enoughness, that's actually where God gets to show his power within us.
Yeah, it really is. It's a surrender and a trust. Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay, God, and like a dependence. And I think that sometimes, even though it doesn't feel like it's a good moment in our lives, like when we come to that place, it's actually mm-hmm. the best place to be. Like just open-handed, Lord, I can't, but I trust that you can. And so I just need you to empower me and work through me and work a miracle. So I'd love to hear, like, yes, you've written a book on this, but like, what was your kind of epiphany moment? Like, did you have like a breaking point, or that moment of surrender that's just like, okay, Lord, I need help?
That's a really great question. I wouldn't say that it was like one moment, but like, I've been a Christian now for 2 decades, and I would say that it's just a process of realizing I can't. Like, I can't. I keep trying. Like, oh my goodness, I keep trying so much and still not able to. So there wasn't necessarily a moment, but I would say about one of the most significant moments, I guess I would say, where it really was transformational for me is, how long ago was this? This was probably 8 years ago. My oldest had just started kindergarten. My youngest was 3, and my youngest was 1 and my middle daughter was 3. And I had just started feeling really off. Like, as a mom where you just feel like in a funk because you're exhausted because these children all the time. But after it had felt weird for a few months, I was like, maybe I'm not just sleep deprived. Maybe something's wrong. So I went to my doctor and, you know, like they do, they're like, well, let's run precaution. precautionary. Let's just run all the tests. And they called me a couple of weeks after that. We're like, you know, Ms. Kaiser, like one of these tests didn't turn out so great. So we're going to do like a whole new batch of tests. I was like, okay, fine. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, I must be dying. Just not one. I don't freak out. I tend to underreact. And 2 weeks later, I was in car line to pick up my three-year-old from preschool, Mother's Day out. And I got a call from the nurse and she was like, Ms. Kaiser, the results didn't turn out the way we'd hope. And we really need you to go see this, some type of oncologist. And I was like I almost dropped my phone because I remember just being like, what? I thought I was just like, you were going to tell me to take a nap, like drink water, do things that are good for you. And I was 2 weeks later sitting in an oncologist's office going through more things, more tests. A month passes of all these things. And a doctor said, okay, we've narrowed it down to these two things. There's one more test that's going to clarify what it was. And one was this rare blood disorder and this other one was leukemia. And he said, we'll do the test, but it's going to be about a 2 week wait. And Rachel, those 2 weeks were the longest 2 weeks of my life. I remember taking a shower and just like wanting to scrub it out of me and not being able to, right? Because it's just within you. And we all have these stories. We all have, maybe yours isn't a leukemia scare, but we have it in our marriage or we have it in another diagnosis or we have it with our finances or we have it with our purpose, or we all have these times in our life where we're like, it is so literally out of my control. I can do nothing about this. And I remember in that time, like everything was falling flat, right? Like it didn't matter what somebody said or what I read. It was just falling flat. And God's word like truly sustained me in that time. And I wound up in Isaiah 43. And there's this story in Isaiah where he talks about when you walk through the fire, you will not be burned. When you walk through the waters, you will not be overwhelmed by them. And then it goes on to say, this is God speaking, will make a way in the wilderness and rivers in the desert. And when I read that, Rachel, as I was waiting for this life-changing announcement from my doctor, I just saw him like, right now I feel stuck in a wilderness, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever been in the wilderness where it's like you're surrounded by trees, there's no path, you have no way to go. And God said, I can clear a way. When there seems to be a no way, I can clear a way. And then the goodness of our Father said, when you find yourself in a desert place, where you're parched, where it seems like there's no hope in sight, I won't just bring you a cup of water. I won't just bring you a well. I won't just bring you a river, but rivers, plural. And that sustained me to realize, listen, I can't handle this. I can't do this. I can't change this, but God can. And for me, it ended up good. I ended up back at that appointment and the doctor was like, we have no clue what happened. Like, you don't have either of these things. They redid all the tests again. All my numbers were completely normal. And then sent me to another place just to like confirm everything. And everything was fine. It made no sense. Like, it was one of those medical moments where they were like, we can't explain this. And so in that moment, I got a miracle, which is what we all hope for when we think about, but God can, right? Like, okay, God, give me the miracle. But then there are other times where we are in the same doctor's office and it's chronic. It's forever. I have another autoimmune thing that was diagnosed at 18 and the doctors are like, this will never go away, and it hasn't. And it has been an unending pain. But God can still then use even that to sustain us in other ways. So I would say, like, if I have to pinpoint a moment where it was like I went from trying to make this a reality to experiencing the reality of it, it really started there. And that verse was so pivotal for me to be like, all right, I can't. I'm stuck in this wilderness. I'm stuck in this desert place, but I'm trusting God that you can make a way when there seems to be no way.
Yeah. I'm so thankful that you're okay. But I'm also so thankful that you're mentioning this, because there's so many people probably listening right now, like, well, God isn't working a miracle right now. I don't see how he's making a way. I've lived with this forever, and maybe I live with it like all of my earthly life. But I think in that verse that you were just talking about, like, Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble.
Yeah.
But take heart, I have overcome the world. And the reality is, just because we're believers doesn't mean, I mean, you look at, like, Daniel still had to face the lions. David still had to, you know, go up against Goliath and go to battle. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego still had to walk through the fire. Yeah. Moses and, you know, all the Israelites still had to walk through the soggy, you know, like, I guess I'm just saying, like, we are still going to be in the fire. We're still going to have to face the lions, but God has promised to be with us. Mm-hmm. Not that we won't experience any of these bad things. Does that provoke any thought in you?
Yeah, because that truly what, so the tagline of the book is how to stop striving and live purposefully and abundantly. And that abundant word, I really wrestled with putting it on the cover because of in Christianity, how we associate abundance with both material possessions and things going our way, right? So abundance, everyone could agree that it was abundant that the doctor said it's nothing. In fact, we can't explain this at all. That's abundance. But then how do you explain, was it abundant when the doctor at 18 told me you have this, you may never be able to have children, and you have all these other health issues for the rest of your life? Was God abundant in that moment? And at the time, I would say, didn't feel too abundant. And many times now still doesn't. But abundance isn't associated with this external results. It is so much more than that. So when we talk about abundance, it has to be like the fruitful life. And so fruitfulness, there is pruning back to get better growth. There is seasons with trees bursting with fruit and green and all of that. And then there's winter where it just, everything's gone. Like that, there's nothing. You're almost like, has it died? Is it dead? Is it coming back? And that's our life when we look at things as it often doesn't go as we hoped or planned, right? It often doesn't turn out even as it should. However, God can still show up in those moments and you can still find his presence, his provision, his abundance, even when it doesn't go the way you hoped, imagined, or deserve.
Yeah, I think you're so right in saying that what we think of as abundance often is like blessings of materialistic and things that we can see tangibly. But I believe that God's maybe version of abundance might be more internal, intangible. And it can be both. I think it can be both, but I think he's more concerned about who we're becoming on the inside, what he's developing in us. Is our heart becoming more like his? And that's abundance and increasing the kingdom of God, you know, that's abundance. And so how he's able to do that, even through miracles and testimonies. And again, going back to when we finally reach that point of in probably the hardest moments, when we finally give up and say, I don't have what it takes, actually, God help me.
Yeah.
Being with him is really the abundant life.
Yeah. Have you experienced that, Rachel, in recent years at all? Obviously not like to the extent maybe of like that cancer scare that I shared of, but have you experienced in other ways, even smaller ways of, man, I was striving, or this didn't go the way I'd expected, but I saw God do something that I can't even explain.
Yeah, I think actually I had a medical journey, and when you were talking, I'm like nodding because I completely understand every ounce of it. And my situation turned out like yours, and everything was benign. But in those moments, I became closer to the Lord. Mm-hmm. I felt his peace. Mm-hmm. I felt people's prayers. I started to realize what a beautiful community God had given me. People surrounded me with prayers and messages and bringing me meals and me realizing like how much I love my life. And I want to stay here on earth and I want to still steward it well. And it kind of made me start to think about like my priorities and how I'm spending my time, and gives me a new perspective. Like, well, life can be short and I want to make the most of it and do, you know, am I stewarding my time well? And so God did a real work in my heart in that really difficult time. I've said before that, you know, even though it was one of the most painful times of my life, it was also one of the times where I felt more loved than any other by the Lord and by other people. And so there was a gift, even in that timing. Mm-hmm. And I think something that I have, you know, you talk about a lot about, cause I've dealt with insecurity, striving, inadequacy, trying to earn love. You're like, this is like my thorn in my side. So yeah. I guess in so many words. Yeah. And so I really look and relate to Paul when Paul says that, but yet our weaknesses really are, it's okay. We can boast in our weaknesses because then when we're weak, then we are strong. And I think that that is so much of your message as well, that you say that women's weaknesses are actually their superpower, that God's going to use it all, especially our weaknesses, to show off his power. Cause it really is about him and about his glory and not about us and our glory. Yeah. And so I'd love for you to maybe elaborate more on why weakness could be actually a good thing.
Yeah. You know, weaknesses is where you get to, there's greater awe, right? When something happens. So right now I am reading through the Old Testament with some friends and we gather weekly to talk about it. And it's been really helpful because it's forcing us, one, to stick with it, and two, to process it. And we've just journeyed with the Israelites through the promised land, or not through the promised land, through the wilderness. And so when you talk about like this idea of weaknesses being your superpower, my first thought in this moment is Moses, because we've just spent a lot of time talking about him. And like when we think about Moses, our summary of him is, he led the Israelites out of slavery and he parted an ocean and took them here. And then he helped, met with God and has the Ten Commandments. Like if we had to describe Moses in two sentences, that's the highlight reel, right? Like he parted an ocean. But the reality of Moses is he had killed a man, ran away, ran away from it, was hiding. God had to get his attention so much that he made a bush catch on fire without burning it. And then he told Moses, I want you to go back. I want you to go back to Egypt and I want you to help your people. And Moses multiple times, 3 or 4 times, was like, no, like hard pass, not going to do it. And God had to like actively persuade him, no, I want you to. But Moses kept discrediting himself, saying he wasn't the man for it. In one of his last petitions, he's like, God, I can't go to Pharaoh. Like, I don't even speak well. Like, I'm not even eloquent with words. So God in his graciousness says, okay, I'll give you a partner and y'all can go together and you'll hear from me and you'll lead this, but he'll speak for you. And that's just like God's excessive grace of like, he sees our weaknesses, knows how to help both give us the confidence to do the thing we could have done on our own, and gave us this ability to move forward. And so when I think about Moses, is his weaknesses is what gives God more glory in that story, right? And the fact that Moses, in all of his fear, right, in all of his fear, and maybe we could even, people would maybe say this is like defamatory, not defamatory, but heretical, of like even his stupidity, right? Like he just made some really bad choices sometimes. But even so, like he still was so faith-filled. And what that does is it gives each of us permission to say, I don't have to have it all together. I don't have to be ready. I don't have to know how, like for you as a podcaster, like we don't have to know how to do the systems or the technology or the graphics. Like when you start looking at all the things that it involves, it's like, well, that's too hard. Like maybe I'll do some Instagram lives occasionally, but that's all I got. Like, because I can't figure the rest out. And what we see in Moses and so many other characters in the Bible is you don't have to have it together. In fact, your not enoughness is what gives God greater ability that he could use you anyway. Not just use you anyway, but that he could say, I love you. We're in relationship together. Let's go do this. And the fact that Moses then was able to part the Red Sea in half, lead the Israelites out of Egypt, knowing slavery for all those hundreds of years, part the ocean in half, and then lead them all the way out, and then the Egyptians all die as the water comes back down. Moses was able to do that because, yes, he was scared to talk. He was scared to fight. He was scared to go in, but he did it scared. He did it imperfect, and he was willing to say, okay, I'm going to raise my arms to you, God, and I'm going to even with these 100,000 plus Israelites standing before me, having left this land, and you see the Egyptians chasing after them, and now there's a sea in front of us, I'm just going to raise my arms and maybe hope that something happens. Like, he didn't know what we have been taught at church all these years, that it was just going to part in half. They'd never seen that. They'd never heard that before. And he raised his arms, and then all of a sudden, it just parted. And they walked across on dry ground, which is the most excessively loving part of the story, that God was like, I don't even want your feet muddy. Like, go, be free. And then the Israelites just continued to teach us all the time, imperfection is fine, because they are the poster child of mess this up 1,000 which ways and God's still going to love you no matter what.
That is so true. I've been doing Married and Youth, read the Bible in 90 days.
Yeah.
And I just finished Revelation yesterday.
Okay.
And that was what I just kept thinking over and over again. We continue to mess up and God continues to rescue us and love us and be faithful to us, even though we continue to be unfaithful. Yeah. And I think for so many of us, we have forgotten, and me included, we've forgotten how powerful of a God we serve.
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, I mean, he is mighty and miraculous and powerful, and he is amazing. Like, I don't even have the vocabulary to describe him. And I think sometimes we forget the God we're serving, the God that has saved us, and what he is capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that is why your message is so important, mm-hmm. to just as a reminder, like, not only of who we are, but who we are because of him, and really who he is. He's the focus. Yeah. He is the main character of all of our stories. Yeah. And so just having this freedom from the pressure that we have to do anything, like, we just have to be willing, really. Like, Lord, I'm willing. I say yes. I'll be obedient. Give me the strength. We have the Holy Spirit as believers inside of us. And so he is empowering us. Like, what a gift that we have that. And so I think it does help to look at stories from the Bible of, like, how God showed up to show us, like, he's still the same God. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. And he is going to continue to work in our lives in those same ways. And so I just think that that's really hopeful. Yes. And so I think for the woman, maybe that's feeling maybe especially hopeless, and just kind of just in that place of defeating and feeling defeated and disappointed and striving and earning and all the things. How would you encourage her to keep hold on to the hope that she can live a abundant life one day in the future, or even today?
Yeah. Well, to me, it's what you just said. I was like going to interrupt you, but I wanted you to keep going because it was so beautiful. And when you said something like, we just have to be willing to be obedient. And I think that's where we get stuck a lot as women, when we feel like God's going to do something within, through us, like a but God care moment could be coming. We can sometimes get paralyzed in fear, or feel like we need to wait a bit more and pray about it, right? Or we need to wait to see, is God opening a door? Is he closing a door? You know, like, well, all those things. And the only encouragement I can offer anyone in that is, sometimes you just need to take a step forward to find out, right? Like, sometimes I think the majority of women hide behind waiting and faith, right? Like, I've been praying about it. I'm just praying and God will make it clear. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's not a lot of scriptural backing for that very common response. Yes, wait, patience, faith. All those things. Yes, yes, yes. Of course. However, we become paralyzed waiting for it to be so clear because we're so afraid to make the wrong step. And what I learned 10 years ago, I had a pastor tell me, like, Becky, do you trust God? And I was like, of course I trust God. It's kind of like when Jesus asked Peter, do you love me? And it's like, well, duh, of course I love you. And so when he asked me, do you trust God? I was like, yes. And he said, do you trust him enough that if you take a step of faith, but it's the wrong step, do you trust him enough to lead you back? And I was like, well, you just ruined my whole life. Like, that was so good of, like, I had been so stuck because I just didn't want to get it wrong. I didn't want to disappoint God. I didn't want to fail publicly or privately. I didn't want to mess up, right? And we talked about that a little bit at the beginning too, of just like holding on to that one talent so tight, because we just, for good reasons, right? This isn't shame. Like, of course you want to please God. Of course you want to like make sure your family's okay. Of course you want to all these things. But sometimes we just don't take that step of faith or that leap of faith we know we need to, because we don't trust that if we are going the wrong direction, that God can turn us back around. And he can. He absolutely can. So that would be my biggest encouragement to women is, listen, take a step. And we talk about it in the book. There's a chapter that said, waiting, baby steps, and leaps of faith. And there are times that God calls us to wait. But I would say more often than not, we need to be taking baby steps and leaps of faith and waiting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't, this is not going to be an encouragement, but like, I just was thinking about how when Jonah, you know, made the wrong decision and God brought a whale and then vomited him back up where he wanted him. You know, I mean, he can get us where we need to go.
You can be thrown up out of a whale's mouth. If only.
Yeah, that wasn't people. Encouraging, but I hope everybody gets
smart. No, it's totally encouraging.
And he'll get us back on track.
You know, like. But it's a funny example because that's true though. Like God can take us so off path. And what that story tells us is he can use the most insane ways of course correcting, right? Like he can say, yes, maybe he was in the whale's belly for these days and then he got thrown up to get to the right place. But he didn't die, right? He didn't die in the water when he was thrown out of the boat going the wrong direction. And what a story that we're still talking about it, right? Like his lack of faith, but God's faithfulness is a story like kids are told all the time. They have bedding that symbolizes Jonah in the whale. Like there is so much about that story that is so accurate and true. So yes, it's a bizarre story, but it is a memorable example of God's faithfulness, even when we are not so faithful.
God can work in any possible way. I'm even thinking about the donkey that ended up like talking on the road to try to get him to like stop. When, who was it riding the donkey? I should know
Balaam,
that.
Balaam?
You know what story I'm talking
yes.
about?
Yes. Is it Balaam?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. But strange. I mean, there's at Bible study this morning that our friends, we were talking about that. We're like, this is really all very weird. Like, good. Sure.
God can, and he will when yes. he's sovereign, and however what is best for his plan and his timeline will happen. And so we just trust in that. Well, okay. So the two questions I've been asking all of my guests. So the first one is, what is something you're loving right now? Two things I'm loving right now is the green color on your wall and your lipstick. Those are two things I'm loving right now as I'm looking at you. So what are you loving right
now? Thank you. Well, then I'll go with something in my house as well. We just got, I referenced it earlier, new floors. And when we moved in 3 years ago, it was the same floors had been here for the 40 years the house had been lived in, loved in. And it was like cat pee stains on white carpet. There was white carpet in like every room that didn't have this weird wood pattern in. And we just finally were able to redo all the flooring. And like, we all are just like dancing around the house like, oh my goodness, it's so pretty. So on a very like surfacey thing, that has been something we've worked really hard to save up and make happen. So that's that. My lipstick, you referenced my lipstick. A friend of mine took me to lunch yesterday just to celebrate like my book being announced. And she sells Beauty Counter and she gave me like two of like their most brightest shades of lipstick. And what's the one I'm wearing today? Do I have it right here in front of me? This is like me now with like trying to read things. It's like, how far away from my eyes can I hold it so I can read it? And I can't. It's too tiny. But then she gave me another one. It's that I'm not wearing right now. It's a hot pink and it's electric. And so it is like, Rachel, it's like the same. I don't have it right now. I posted it on my Instagram, but it's like the same color pink as my book cover. And we're going to go ahead and throw this in all the influencer boxes because it was so perfect. So those are two like very like, worldly things I am loving and make me ridiculously happy right now.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I think the Lord wants us to enjoy life. Yes. I think for sure. But coming back to the Bible, because I know that we both are Bible lovers, and yes. because this is a Love Offering podcast, I've been asking everybody what is like a biblical concept of love that applies to this topic. But you actually have like three chapters, I think, that are focused on God's love and loving others and mm-hmm. loving yourself on the greatest mm-hmm. commandment. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but yeah. I know you also wrote about this. And so would you tell us more about the importance of this command in relation yes. to this?
I love that you wrap this, like every person who listens to your podcast needs to make sure they always stick to the end all the way through, because it would be so interesting to hear everybody's answer to this. Where I feel like God's taught me a lot this past year, and I talked about just a smidge before earlier, was that the greatest commandment that talks about love, like how we've summarized the greatest commandment as Christians often is we summarize it, love God, love others. Love God, love others. But the truth is, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself. And for whatever reason, which is odd because especially in American Christianity, we are pretty self-centric people. Like we like to talk or be about ourselves. Like that is how the world bends now. But the one time where it was biblically appropriate, we've cut out because we feel like we're supposed to die to self. We're supposed to die to flesh. Like any thought of self is selfishness. And embedded in the greatest commandment is we love God and we love others as we love ourselves. And so I said it at the beginning of the chapter in the book. So I have the third part of the book is all very practical. Like I put on my life coach hat and we're like, okay, we've dealt with things, we've understood things. And now how do we move forward really, really practically? And so there's a chapter on loving God. Then there's a chapter on loving yourself. Then there's a chapter on loving others. And I feel like that chapter on loving yourself is the one that I'm for sure going to get the most like slack for, because we are told to die to ourselves. And what I've learned is the best way we can love ourselves, like the best way we can love God and others, is when we also love ourselves, right? And that feels very, very uncomfortable and almost even like sinful to even talk about, because we're so programmed to not think that way. But just like at the flight attendant, right? As you as a parent and anyone with kids knows, like when the flight attendant comes on, she says, make sure you put your oxygen mask on first before you help those around you. And that feels so wrong, right? Like as a parent, you should save your kid first and then yourself. But the reality is if the plane's crashing or if oxygen's leaking out of the plane, you will only be able to help your children if you are breathing, right? Like if you pass out, you can't help them. And it's the same way in Christianity. I think that's why the Lord was so intentional to attach it to loving others, is unless you have filled your cup full, unless you are the healthiest version of yourself, you'll never be able to pour out to other people. You'll never be able to love them. And so now loving yourself is different, I think, than the world says too, right? Like it's not like love yourself and let's do this fake mantras in the mirror like we talked about earlier, or loving yourself doesn't mean that you go and do all these like shopping trips or whatever. Those can be loving toward yourself, but that's not what it's referencing. Loving myself was when I had yelled at my kids. Loving myself was giving myself grace in that moment, picking my kids up, grabbing a Sonic drink, having a talk with them, and sipping tea during the day. That was loving myself. Loving myself when I find out somebody's gossiped about me would be saying, instead of like getting bitter or mad or wanting to correct it or just sulking, is saying, man, that really hurt. And then sending them a text and asking them if we could talk. That's loving myself. And so I think we also just have to redefine what self-love is instead of just shutting it down completely.
Yeah. Oh, I think there's so much truth to that, that, you know, it goes back to like, we want to treat them as we want to be treated. Yeah. And I think even at the very beginning of the show, we were talking about like, we would never talk to somebody else the way we would talk to ourselves. Yeah. And so if we're talking to ourselves that way, that's never how we would treat somebody else. Yeah. And so I do think that, there's just so much truth in that, and mm-hmm. to really believe in who God has called us to be. Like, he does not make mistakes. Yeah. Our God created us in his image. And so when we're criticizing ourselves, we're almost criticizing how he made us. Mm-hmm. And so in the gifts he's given us and the talents and the way we look and our abilities. And so I think when we really start to understand and grasp that, the magnitude mm-hmm. of that, it starts to change the way we perceive ourselves. And then I think the way we perceive other people, that they were created in his image too. And so I think that that's a beautiful way to end today's episode. And as we come to a close, I would also love for you to just pray for us. You know, so many of us are struggling, me included. This is such a felt need for so many of us. And I know we want to live an abundant life. And so I'd just love for you to pray that over us. Yeah.
Father, thank you so much for this time. Thank you for our friends listening right now. God, whether she's folding laundry or sitting in a car ride or line or going for a walk or sitting at her desk, Jesus, we ask that she would feel seen by you. I pray that she would feel heard, known, that she has a safe space here. Lord, I pray that you would show each of us as we are listening to this, God, what is the thing you want us to remember? How do you want us to respond to you, to ourselves, to others? What do you need our takeaway to be from all of this? Father, thank you for Rachel. Thank you for how she just so lovingly and graciously leads this conversation and encourages authenticity among this community. Father, I pray that you would bless her and her ministry. I pray for her and for everyone listening, God, that you would help us to trust that even when we can't, we would trust that you can. May we believe that. May we believe that when we feel stuck. May we believe that when we take steps, baby steps, and leaps of faith. We trust you, Father. We love you. We're so grateful for this time that we've had together. Do you continue to bring to mind the thing, Spirit, you want us to remember? And so your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Well, I have loved today's conversation. No, I want to stay connected with you. I'm sure listeners are going to want to stay connected with you. So tell us how we can best do that.
Yeah. So the best place to go right now is, well, two places, my website, beckykaiser.com. And if you do /butgodcan, then you'll find links to where you can order the book. Pre-orders are through May 7th. And if you pre-order, there's all kinds of like goodies too. So if, I'm not sure when this is coming out, but if it's not too late, go pre-order the book because there's so many amazing goodies for you that if you do that. And then I'm on Instagram the most. So if you hang out on Instagram, follow me, Becky Kaiser. It's K-I-S-E-R. I'd love to connect. Just send me a DM, comment on posts so we can get to know each other. But that's definitely where I hang out the most online.
All right. Well, Becky, thank you for just the gentle but encouraging reminder that maybe we can't, but God always can. Thank you so much.
That's good.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode with Becky Kaiser. We hope that today encouraged you to believe that God can. If you're interested in show notes, you can head on over to @RachelAdamsAuthor on Instagram or Facebook. I'd love to connect with you there. I'd also love to connect with you over on rachelkadams.com. There you can subscribe to receive your weekly love offering newsletter, and all of this information can go straight to your inbox each week. You can also listen to previous podcast episodes, you can read the blog series, and you can download free resources like the Who You Say I Am devotional. Again, you can find that at rachelkadams.com/free. Next week, my guest is Heather Creekmore. She's on the show talking about how to age gratefully. I can't wait to chat with you again then. But until then, I hope you have a terrific week. And as always, remember to lead with love.